Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Live recording of a podcast episode, and we got a room full of people. Everybody say hello.
Hello.
Oh, that sounded real excited. I tell you what. No, there is a room full of people here to watch us do a podcast. So apparently you all just don't have enough to do in your life. But we're here at a Replant Summit, a couple hundred pastors and their wives. And there's different breakouts they can go to right now. And one of them was coming to a live podcast of Revitalize and Replant. And they were all quite disappointed to realize that Mark Halleck is not here. He is on sabbatical.
He is.
And Dan Hurst is not here. He's the voice. He's out making money doing movie trailers. So it's just me, Mark Clifton, and Kyle Behrman. Say hey, Kyle.
Yep. Hey, I'm usually on the other side of the board. This is fun to be on this part.
Fun for you. It's okay, for me too, I guess. Anyway, I've got some things I want to share, and then we'll have a time for you to ask some questions. So if you got some questions you want to ask us from the podcast, we'd be glad to answer them. But, you know, this is called Revitalize and Replant. And oftentimes people want to know what's the difference between revitalization and replanting. In fact, I get that question probably much or more than any other question. And it's a good question. And the answer is there isn't really hard and a fast rule of what the difference is. There's a lot of gray area in between. But the short answer would be most churches need some form of revitalization. They just constantly need to be rediscovering more about themselves, rediscovering more about their community, rediscovering more about Jesus, and working more toward the mission that God has called them to. And if they don't continually make that a priority, they will engage in what we call missional drift. And it happens kind of slowly, usually, but after a while you realize, man, our church is actually declining in impact, declining in making disciples, declining in baptisms, and perhaps even declining in attendance. And we no longer impact our community. And then all of a sudden you realize we need to make some changes. And revitalization is really where your church isn't going to close in the next 5 years or 10 years. I mean, there's enough money, enough people to keep it moving. But a replant, now, that's a little different. In a replant situation, you can look at your past 10 or 20 years of activity. You can look at the giving, the attendance, the baptisms, the expenditures, the loss of members. And you can graph that out. And what you do is you say, well, it's going in a downward direction. And if that direction were to continue for another 5 or 10 years, we would eventually be underwater. And that church is a candidate for a replant, simply because you don't have enough time to make the small changes that you need to make over time in revitalization. In other words, in revitalization, you make some minor changes in direction, but you project that over a 15-year period, then your church is really going to be headed in a different direction. In a replant, you make some minor changes. Well, the runway is at the end. You don't have enough time. You're going to run out of runway. And so it causes for a more drastic solution in a replant, which basically means in a replant, you sort of either you get outside help that comes in and helps you completely retool the church and deal with the systemic problems that are in there, or if the church absolutely refuses to take outside help and they don't have a pastor, then you call a pastor who understands the long journey of replanting a church from within. And we've heard some of those stories even since we've been here in Alpharetta. Guys who go there and you're going to have to stay 4, 5, 7, 8 years in order for you to really see the movement of God in a way that changes the culture of the church. Now, with that said, God can do anything he chooses to do. And if you get up and preach an amazing sermon one Sunday morning and the church changes overnight, well, praise God, he could do that. But he chooses most of the time to work through you and me over a lot of work, over a lot of years, because he's working on us as the pastor as well as the congregation. And he looks at our faithfulness over many years and he rewards that. So many times going to a replant situation, you have to stay many years and endure many transitions in order for it to grow and get back to some degree of health. And we say health is a pattern of making disciples that make disciples. that result in the community being noticeably better. So if your church is in need of revitalization, it's declined, it's not reaching its community, the community has changed around it, I mean, there's a lot of resources out there from the associations, the state conventions, your national entities, all kinds of places that can help you refocus. And we spend a lot of time talking about revitalization. But if you're talking about replanting, man, you don't have much time left. This church is going to have to close its doors pretty soon. We're running out of money. We're running out of people. Now, it may be that your church sells the parsonage and you've got $250,000. Well, you can live for 5 years on that. Or you have some property that someone donated to you and you sell that. Or a dear saint dies and leaves you some money in from his estate. We call that life support. You don't figure that into the growth or the chart of the church because that's not going to happen again and again. That's a one-time thing. So we call that life support. So your church can live on life support for a really long time. I worked with a particular church that was in a downtown area, and church would seat about 800. They had about 40 people. You think, how in the world do they stay open all these years? They had a multi-level parking lot that was across the street from a university. And so during the week, they rented out that multi-level parking lot. Man, they could stay in business till Jesus comes back. I mean, money was not an issue because of that multi-level parking lot. The old consultant for Methodist a long time ago, Lyle Schaller, used to say that money in the bank is the death wheeze of a church. I mean, it's dangerous to have a lot of money. You get to where you don't need anything else. So in a replant situation, if the normal giving and attendance and membership gains or losses, if they continue on a certain level, if within 5 years you're going to be underwater, you're a replant candidate. And so there are basically four arenas we see God working in replanting. Number one, you get adopted by a healthy, younger church. And usually that means a church plant that's looking for a building, right? And so what does a church plant have? It generally has an abundance of young leadership. There may be some church plants out there from, I don't know, Sun City, Arizona or someplace that have nothing but 80-year-olds. But most church plants I've seen are full of young people because they're all about vision. They're all about hard work. They're all about the future. And they generally attract young people. So most of the time, a church plant is going to be full of young adults, young men particularly. Most of the time, dying churches, the one thing they don't have would be young men between the ages of 18 and 40. They may have a few, but they're not in the majority. And the thing about young men, particularly, and young women between the ages of 18 and 40, they are people of real vision. They have a passion for the future. Anything is possible. And if you get to be my age, we sort of say, I don't think we can do that again, or I don't think we should do that again. We lack that vision. So a lot of times in an adoption, what you'll have is you'll have a young church full of vision, full of energy, full of optimism, full of hope, but no building. And then you have an older church that's lost its vision, that's lost its optimism, that's lost its hope, but they got a building. It would seem a real simple thing to just do, you know, church buildings, match.com, and put those two together. It isn't easy, all right? Those are two incredibly different cultures. And you can't Velcro two churches together, okay? And always the dying church, and if you're a dying church and you're listening to this, please, turn up the radio. Oh, you're not listening on a radio. Whatever you're listening on. It's not a merger, okay? It's not a merger. You don't want to merge, I'm sorry, but you don't want to merge something that's growing with something that's dying. What is the purpose of that merger? It's like if I need a heart transplant, and I'm not in that good of shape, but if I need a heart transplant, I'm probably not going to go find some 97-year-old with congestive heart failure and say, hey, put it in me, right? You're not going to want to do that. So when we talk about merger, sometimes the older church says, well, you know, we're bringing something to this table. You know, we've got all this. And you do bring something, don't get me wrong, but what you bring, some of that you need to leave alone. You need to leave back there. So what we talk about is not a merger between a church plant and a dying church. We talk about an adoption of a church plant of a dying church. They adopt the dying church. What's that mean? Well, in adoption, you want something. I mean, if you're going to adopt a child, you plan for it, you prepare for him, you're excited about him, you change the house so the child can have a place to sleep, and you make a room for him, and you're anxious to have that child. And so the new church needs to be anxious to have the dying church. It's not just taking the building. If you just want their building, well, then take a hike. We're not interested in working with you on that. But if you want to adopt this dying congregation because these are saints who've loved Jesus for all these years, they're at the end of their life, their spouses are passing away, their friends are passing away, the children may live a long way away, they got incredible health problems. If they ever needed shepherding and pastoral care, they need it now. And many times, a new church, the one thing that's missing are 88-year-old widowers. I mean, the Lord allowed me to plant 10 churches or 12 churches. I never once wondered, what is my strategy to reach 88-year-old widows in my neighborhood? It just wasn't part of my thinking. But it's part of the Lord's thinking that the church be multi-generational. So if a younger church is willing to adopt an older church and love them. Now listen, if you've adopted children that are not infants, try adopting a 17-year-old. You know, they got a way of living. They know they go to bed a certain time. They get up a certain time. They eat certain foods. They have certain friends. And you're going to adopt this 17-year-old, and you're going to say, now you're part of our culture. We go to bed at this time. These are the foods we eat. We don't watch these TV shows. We only play video games this many hours. That's a little bit what it's like when you adopt a dying church. They have a way. They've been doing it for a long time. But if they're going to be adopted into your culture, they have to become part of your culture. And so the adopting parent has to be very patient and loving with these adoptees. It's hard for them to make that adjustment. Sometimes we think that they should just make it instantly. Well, they're not. It's going to be difficult. But the adopting parent overcomes all of that, right, in a home by loving that adopting child, by being patient with that adopting child, by realizing they're going through a lot of difficulties and challenges in caring for them. So if you're going to be a new church plant and you're going to adopt a dying church, you need to have that mentality that we're going to love these older people and care for them, and it's going to be very hard for them, and they may resist some things, but that just means we're going to love them even more, all right? Likewise, if you're the church that's being adopted, you need to go in there realizing it's their way to do Christmas. It's their way to do holidays. It's their way. We're going to a new culture. It's even their name we're probably taking. We're getting a new name. Oftentimes, that's the first thing an older church will say is, well, we don't want to change our name. Say, well, you're going to close anyway. you know. And some of them would rather die than change their name. That's another story for another day. But we want to help you work through those adoption issues. And when they work out well, it's a wonderful picture of the kingdom, where a younger church all of a sudden receives this wonderful asset, this amazing building that can be used to glorify God that was really way underused. And the dying church all of a sudden can just relax and say, you know, it doesn't depend on us anymore. These young people can take care of the building. They can really do the missional lifting in the neighborhood. What we can do, we can pray for them and love them and encourage them and support them and champion them and applaud them until we go to heaven. And what the younger church can do is they say, we can make these older people's last years on earth some of the sweetest they've ever had. That's the goal of adoption, all right? If not adoption, then fostering. And fostering is where one church or more churches will come alongside a dying church and say, look, we're not going to fully adopt you, but it's like a foster child. For a period of a year to 3 years, We'll come alongside and we'll make all the decisions and we'll handle all the effort and you just sort of watch us and we'll try to teach you how to do it. And our goal is to get you back on your feet. And then another one would be campusing. And that's where a larger church says, we just want you to become a campus of our church and all that that entails. And that's where immediately you just become part of the mother church and you're part of their campus. And then, as I said, the fourth one is really planting from within. And that's where the dying church doesn't want to do any of those things, but they need a new pastor. So we come along with that new pastor and say, here's what you need to do when you replant a dying church. Number one, you love the remaining members and you get their hearts to warm back to the gospel. As Jared Wilson says, you love the church you have, not the church you wish you had. You got to love the 18 older people who are there. If you don't love them, God's not going to bring you anymore, right? And you've got to love them in a way that gets them to love Jesus more. Are you ready? They have to love Jesus more than the church as they are currently experiencing it. Many of them think that they're loving Jesus, but what they really love is the church as they experience it. because everything else in their life has turned upside down. They don't recognize this country anymore. They don't recognize the political landscape anymore. They don't recognize technology anymore. They don't know how to talk to their grandchildren anymore on FaceTime, or not even FaceTime, on all kinds of other social media. Their friends are dying. Their health is getting worse. Everything about their life is changing, except the one thing they can go every week, and for a brief period, everything is predictable. I know where to sit. I know what to experience. Nothing's going to change. And that sameness brings me a sense of control in my life when I feel like everything else is out of control. And so what Satan has done, he has made that a false idol in their life. And among other things, an idol is something you run to for comfort, for meaning, and for security. But you know something's a false idol when you're afraid of losing it. And your job as a replant pastor is to help them lay down that false idol of the church as they experience it. Every month we have a business meeting. We're going to read the minutes. I'm going to see how much money's been spent. And by the way, I may not have a job anymore, and my kids may not call me much anymore, and I may not be important in the community anymore, but I am on the finance committee of that church. And we're not going to renew that copy or lease unless I say it's okay. So I feel important in this church. I feel like this church is predictable. That's an idol, and you have to help them lay down that idol and embrace only Jesus, because they're always going to come to church thinking you're going to take something from them rather than they're going to get something from God. And so that's your job. And it doesn't happen quickly. It's going to take months or years, and some of them, you will only see them make progress toward that. They may never get there this side of heaven, but at least you want to say, hey, they're moving a little closer toward the goalpost all the time. So love the remaining members. How do you get their hearts to warm to the gospel? Number one, you preach Jesus. Preach Jesus, preach Jesus, preach Jesus. In every message, preach Jesus. They need to know, in terms of their salvation, it doesn't matter what they've done for this church in 40 years. It only matters what Jesus has done for them in the last 40 seconds. In terms of their salvation, all their work, all their effort, all their money, all the sweat, all the toil they've given to this church won't buy them 1 minute outside of hell. All that purchases their salvation is Jesus. They have to come to that full realization. So you've got to be intentional about preaching Jesus. In the Old Testament, yes, he's in the Old Testament. When Jesus is on the road to Emmaus, he says to those disciples, I'm the one spoken of in the Old Testament. It's full. When Paul talks about in the scripture, Jesus in the scripture, he's talking about the Old Testament scripture. Jesus is, the whole Bible is about him. So your sermons, when you're preaching revitalization, have to be about Jesus. You've got to get their hearts warmed to the gospel. Now, if they are truly converted and you are preaching Jesus and you're leading them in good, solid worship of Christ in their own heart language, that means songs they know and can sing, by the way. And if you're doing gospel conversations with them at their home and where they have hobbies, and if they're truly converted, you will see their hearts warm back to Jesus. If they're not converted, if they're unregenerate, they're going to get mad at you, because they're not going to like that kind of preaching and those kinds of conversations. And you're going to have to endure that, and you're going to have to deal with that, because there are unregenerate church members, and many of them will eventually leave because they won't stand for that, or they'll just stay there and make your life difficult, and you have to lean into Jesus to help you work through that. So you love the remaining members, get their hearts to warm to Jesus. Number two, as a replant pastor, you get to know the community, and you serve it like a missionary. You got to find ways to be in that community, exegete that community. You need to know more about the community than anybody else in the community. You spend time there. You shop there. You get your hair cut there. You drink coffee there. You volunteer Little League coach there. Your job, while you're loving those older members, your job is not to go in and change everything in the church. Don't worry about changing the stage and making the flags off the stage and changing. Don't worry about that right now. Worry about loving those remaining members, getting their hearts to warm to Jesus. Don't make them angrier than they may already be, you know? You're just going to upset them more. Just find ways to love them more and get them to love Jesus more. At the same time, you got plenty to do out there making lost friends and trying to share the good news and trying to connect to the lost world as though you were a brand new church planter and you didn't even have this congregation here on the corner to deal with. You've got to do both things. So you're out there exegeting the community, serving the community, asking Jesus to bring lost men and women across your path that you can share Jesus with. Look, your dying church isn't going to care if you do that. They're not going to fight you over it. Try removing the Christian flag off the stage and you'll spend 3 months fighting over it. But just spend some time in the coffee shop talking to lost people and they don't care about that at all. So do those kinds of things and exegete the community, get to know the community, and then find ways to serve the community. And, you know, it may be that your church doesn't have the bandwidth to serve the community, but lean into your association and sister churches. I don't have time to get in all of that, But you need to find ways to love and serve the community in the name of your local church. And then thirdly, focus like a laser on young people. You got to love the older people. You don't forget them, but you've got to find ways to focus like a laser on young men, young women in your neighborhood, in your community. Lead them to Christ, disciple them, maybe just even in your home to begin with, and then bring them into the church. And you will see if you do that for 3 years, 5 years, and you're consistent with it, you will see a new culture begin to change. You'll see the older people grow closer to Jesus. You'll love the neighborhood and the community more, and the community will respect you and love you more, and Jesus will bring lost young people across your path that you can share Jesus with, and you'll begin to see that merge. There's nothing more than that. It is just hard work of a pastor and a missionary. But if you do it, the Lord will respond to it. Because Jesus said, I will build my church. And if you do that work, you're laying the foundation and he will add to it. If you don't do that work, he won't add to it. So that's the way we see that. So that's kind of a real quick summary on replanting, revitalization.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.